I'm joined here today by Jen Shoemaker from Adventure Scientists, and she's got some information about a upcoming project that Adventure Scientists will be conducting, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that, Jen.
Yes, so Adventure Scientists is participating with state officials to help solve the problem of wildlife and vehicle collisions on Montana roads. As you know, there are a lot of accidents every year with elk and deer and moose and even smaller animals, and it results in not only a lot of animal deaths, but a lot of human injuries and even deaths as well. So we're doing it in a little bit of an unusual way. Instead of having people in cars driving along the roadsides to look for roadkill or, you know, even wild animal sightings, we are enlisting road cyclists who are going out and riding stretches of roads to look for wild animals and dead animals along the roadside to help identify hotspots of where animals are crossing the roads.
Wow, that sounds like a great project. And so, you'll help coordinate with, as people volunteer, you'll help coordinate routes for them and try to make sure you get good coverage.
Yeah. So when volunteers apply for the project, there's a map that they can look at and select routes. They're 50-mile routes. So people can split it up. If they don't want to do the whole 50 miles, they can have teammates that do certain portions and kind of tag team it. And, you know, there's routes everywhere from the beautiful plains of eastern Montana up to the Beartooth Mountains, et cetera. So there's kind of something for everybody.
Yeah. The people that pick the ride up the Beartooth Highway, that'll be a little bit more of a more strenuous task, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. I think I would like to ride the beautiful, you know, flat plains of eastern Montana myself, but you know, there's a lot of people who love to ride for, you know, exercise. There's people who cycle Everest, you know, in terms of doing elevation. So there's a lot of people who really kind of crave that physical challenge. We are adventure scientists. And so we have a lot of people in our volunteer community who really like that physical challenge.
I think that's a great angle to put on it, like tie those two things together. Did this project, was this something that someone at Adventure Scientists kind of conceived of, or was there a reach out from the Montana Department of Highways, or how did this come to be?
Well, we work, we have people that go out and are talking with scientists all the time, trying to figure out kind of where the next steps should be for our organization. What we focus on at Adventure Scientists is we're really trying to help scientists solve critical environmental or human health problems through the, you know, collection of data. And so it needs to be areas where we don't have a lot of data. And that was certainly the case here. I believe that state highway officials really had a lot of, you know, accident data, but they don't have a lot of information just on crossings. And so, you know, if it's a smaller animal, they really weren't able to capture that. So, you know, we have a lot of partnerships with the state level as well as at the federal level. So it's something we were thinking about. And of course, with our headquarters here in Bozeman, Montana, we've all certainly, you know, had our run-ins or near run-ins with wildlife as well. So it was something that was a pretty obvious problem and a real critical problem here in Montana.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, you know, expanding it beyond just identifying roadkill sites to animal sightings and animal crossing sightings. And I think it's interesting to think about how much better that data will be having cyclists accumulate it versus people in vehicles. I wonder if you have any kind of estimate about what sort of effect that will have or how much of a difference that might make.
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, obviously road cyclists are traveling a lot more quietly. So I think probably a lot of the animals that would turn in the forest if they heard a car coming, they might be capturing some of that. And also just because they're moving slower and they're able to see into the roadside ditches, you know, not, you know, obviously a lot of animals that they get struck, they don't die right there on the roadway. A lot of them make it off the side of the road. So I think it's going to really, I think the road cycling is really the key to provide a better picture of what's happening on there versus just, you know, flying down the road in a vehicle and or just relying on what you would get from a crash report.
Right. And so do you have a time frame? The project is this fall, but is there a very tight time frame for when it needs to finish up, or?
Well, our project actually runs through 2022. Oh. So people can apply to volunteer for multiple years. It started last fall, and we've had 3 ride periods this summer. And there are 10-day periods that help us kind of capture the different seasons and also give us kind of the scientific quality we really need to be able to compare data effectively. So our next ride period is going to come up. It's September 18th through September 27th. So a 10-day window. And it's just a beautiful period to ride, you know, and with all the, you know, fall migration and the changing seasons. And hopefully not too much snow, which all of our riders had last year. But, you know, it's Montana, so who knows?
That's true. Yeah, last year was kind of tough for the fall activities.
Yes, and you know, you never know what you're going to get, right? But I mean, that's, again, that gets to our volunteers, is we had riders that were going out in the snow, who were, you know, and in the rain and everything, and just busting through to get the data. It's absolutely fantastic to see how tenacious they really are.
Yeah. Do you think, is the ride scheduled for September the last one you think you'll have scheduled for this year?
Yes. Yeah. So it's the final ride of the 3 for the year. And then we'll be starting up again spring next year.
Any other details you'd like to provide about this project and specifically the ride coming up?
Yeah, well, you know, in terms of what we're hoping to get from it, our partners at Montana Department of Transportation and Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks, they're using the data to help plan ways to help reduce wildlife vehicle collisions and human deaths and animal deaths in the future. You know, it's a huge problem in the United States. There's 365 million animals killed every year in the U.S., as well as 29,000 people either injured or killed in these collisions. And Montana ranks as, you know, the second highest per capita in terms of these kinds of accidents. So they're really looking at trying to understand animal movement in general across the landscape, and where they might be able to plan mitigation techniques, things like extra signs, lights, you know, possibly considering things like overpasses or underpasses even, to help animals move more freely across the landscape, help save human lives.
Right. So with each of these routes, do you hope to have multiple volunteers cover the same route, maybe on different days, or...
Yeah. So, you know, so our goal is to have it's 11,000 miles of roadway cycled for, you know, the project. And these are state highways in Montana, not obviously the big federal fruit, you know, highways that go through. And so in that period, if one group wants to get out and do a 50-mile stretch within that, we only need one group. Per ride period. But, you know, some people may want to ride that same stretch multiple times and see how the seasons are changing. Other folks, they might be once and done. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity if one of those routes that someone wants is claimed one time, it certainly might be open for the next ride period. And, you know, that's what I think is kind of fun. It's like, grab that route, because, you know, once it's taken, you won't be able to, you'll be able to ride it, of course, anytime, but you won't be able to ride it in service of this science project until the next ride period.
So because of the huge number of miles that need to be ridden, you really aren't set up to collect multiple sets of data from the same ride period from multiple riders.
Yeah, all we're aiming to do is get one data set per 50-mile stretch for that ride period. That's what we need for the science. But, you know, we welcome anyone to go out and ride whenever they want. And, you know, the other thing about this project is this is a Montana-specific project, and we hope that it's going to really set a model that can be scaled up nationally or even internationally. But we also do have a global aspect of it where anyone who likes this idea and wants to serve their community by going out and riding, they can do that as well. They can collect the data, send it to us, and then we'll have that available for, you know, as an open source product for anybody who wants to access that and understand what the situation is in their country. So, you know, their country or their state. So we have riders in other states going out. We have riders going out internationally as well. But in terms of this very coordinated, targeted effort, we're starting with Montana.
Yeah. So this is your, this is kind of the pilot of this project idea.
It is, yeah. And that's a lot of what we do at Adventure Scientists. You know, we have models that of scientific work that can be scaled up. We have another project going on, for instance, that's aimed at catching tree poachers within the United States. We're working with the U.S. Forest Service on trees that are targeted by timber thieves. But the idea with that, too, we're setting the model, we're creating these genetic and chemical databases of trees, kind of like these little tree neighborhoods, so that when someone brings a piece of wood into a sawmill, that can be tested, and they could identify it came if it came from where they said it did, or if it came from, like, you know, a national forest, for instance. And that can be used to prosecute timber theft. But that can be scaled up as well. And we're hoping that's going to serve as an international model to help combat illegal poaching, tree poaching around the world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So how many different projects and kind of these ideas has Adventure Scientists got in the works or undertaken?
I think we have about three projects going on this summer. And then, you know, every year it's different. We'll probably have more next year. And we're quite selective in which projects we take on, because we really want to make sure that the science that we're doing is really moving the needle on a critical issue. You know, we could do just every possible, you know, avenue of science, but we have a really high standard so that our volunteers know they're contributing to meaningful science that's going to create positive change in the world.
I think that's a great thing to kind of make sure that there's that positive feedback for the volunteers and give them a feeling of, I mean, obviously, like you said, a lot of them are, they're doing a lot of this in conjunction with an activity they already enjoy, but I think it's still important to provide that, you know, that feeling that they're actually helping to make a significant contribution.
Exactly. I mean, they might be out there anyway, hiking and kayaking and cycling, but, you know, to know that you're, first of all, doing something you love, but doing it in service of the greater good, that's really what we started, how we started as an organization. You know, our founder really looked around, his name's Greg Trenish, he looked around and he said, you know, I want to do more than be an adventurer, just be out there enjoying these places for myself. I want to find a way to give back and help other people who, like me, love nature, love being outside, and have this really unique skill set in the outdoors to do something really meaningful and lasting and participate in science and kind of see the results of it.
Yeah. So as volunteers go out and they collect all of this data and they kind of funnel it back into Adventure Scientists, is it a volunteer organization that accumulates and processes all of that data and makes the data sets available?
So we, in most cases, we send the data to the scientists that we're partnering with. And in the vast majority of those cases, they make those data sets public. So while it may not be volunteers who are doing the data analysis, it definitely can be communities that benefit from the data sets. For instance, with the microplastics project we have, which, by the way, microplastics are those super tiny, invisible, in many cases, plastics that are everywhere. They're, you know, raining from the skies now. They're in your honey and your beer, as well as the world's oceans. They're just ubiquitous. That project, we open sourced the data. We have one of the largest data sets on Earth that our volunteers collected. And we not only open sourced those data, that data for anyone to use, we actually created a toolkit so that communities around the world could kind of learn from what we did and, you know, collect their own scientific samples in their communities and understand the scope of the problem where they are. So that's something that we're trying to, you know, we're trying to be very democratic about the process of science, so that everybody gets involved, and also about sharing the information that we have so everyone can use that science to help improve their own communities.
Great. Yeah, I think that too often that aspect of it gets lost a little bit, you know, regardless of who's doing the science. You know, I think there's sometimes a temptation to try to keep a touch on it or keep a little bit of control on it as the data gets assembled and goes out there. And I think it's great to treat it as a community resource and let everyone who might have interest in it get access and see what they can do with it.
Absolutely. And we aim for that wherever possible. I mean, there's some cases, you know, where we have to be a little bit limited. For instance, you know, if we're collecting information on trees that are being poached and are super valuable, some of that information for the safety of the species that we're working on needs to be held a little bit closer. But wherever we can, we absolutely try to get it in the hands of the people that can use that information to make the best decisions.
Right. Is it... do you have help with making some of those difficult determinations about, you know, potential sensitivity of data and you know, the places where you might need to limit exposure?
Yeah, usually, I mean, we in working with our scientific partners, we really talk through all that. Like, you know, how open can we make this information? Where are any security concerns we have to worry about? And we start from a position of let's try to make this, you know, information public. And then if we need to kind of restrict a little bit for the protection of the species, we do.
Right. So these projects are, you find a partner for all of them, and they're kind of the, I guess, the principal investigators and are setting up the parameters for the projects like that?
Yeah, or they come to us with a problem and say, you know, help us figure out together how to get the information we need. We do a lot of project design work to help our partners kind of figure out how to best use this really unique skill set in the volunteers that we have, how big of, you know, an effort we need to make, how many volunteers need to go out, et cetera. So we, you know, we have just about 10 years of experience under our belt now doing this kind of stuff. So I think we bring a lot of really interesting value to the table with our partners in that we can say, oh yeah, we've done this before. This is how big this should be. And you know, what do you think about that? And work together to help kind of design those projects.
Maybe you'd like to say a little bit about Adventure Scientists, like how long it's been around. You mentioned something about the founding of it, but how long it's been around and how big an organization it is.
Adventure Scientists was founded in 2011, so we're coming up on our 10th birthday, and we're a homegrown nonprofit here in Bozeman, Montana, you know, that really takes advantage, I think, of two great things we have in the community, which is a, you know, wonderful group of scientists, nonprofits, but also this wonderful volunteer base here within, you know, our hometown. And we've grown into an international organization. We have projects, including some new ones coming up next year, that really are global in nature. So it's really exciting to see kind of the progress of the organization over the last 10 years. And I love the fact that we really are focused on projects that are going to move the needle on these real critical, both environmental and human health issues.
That's great. I know that there are the volunteers that work on each of these projects, but how big is the core group?
So Adventure Scientists has about 16 staff right now. Most of them are in our Bozeman headquarters, and we have a couple employees that are working remotely from other states.
Wow, great. That's a fairly large organization, so.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And then, of course, on top of that, we have the thousands of volunteers who, you know, are the ones that are actually out there getting the data and having all the fun.
And how do you find it fairly easy to recruit volunteers for these projects? Is it kind of a word of mouth being most effective, or what works well for finding volunteers?
Well, we've been really lucky in that there's so many people from the outdoor, you know, community who just love nature and are really interested in science. So for a lot of our projects, we really haven't had to do a lot of heavy recruiting. I think some things come a little more naturally to that fit. For instance, we have a project focusing on getting water quality data on our wild and scenic rivers. That's a project that we are working on with several federal agencies. And that project, we have had just an incredible response from kayakers, hikers, et cetera, that just want to get out there. Love these rivers, and they want to do anything they can to help protect them. I think our road cycling project actually has been a little more challenging. Obviously, there's a lot of cyclists on Montana. I think a lot of them are really into fitness, and so the idea of going a little slower, stopping, you know, every time you see an animal, that might be a little more of a challenge for folks. But we're hoping that there's enough folks out there who really like this idea of, like, you know, biking for the greater good, biking for science, who don't mind kind of having a more leisurely ride as a result.
Right. So when they, if they're doing the ride and they do find a place where they need to record some data, how involved is that process?
Well, it's actually quite simple once they get out in the field. We do require them to do an online training, which is, you know, it's an hour or two of work that they have to go through. They have to pass the test 100%. And that's because we want to make sure that they're collecting really rigorous science that's going to stand up. But once they get out there, it's actually pretty simple. There's a phone app. And so they gather data on, they take photos of what they're seeing. You know, obviously that's easier if it's roadkill than if it's a live animal, and record location, any other information, weather, et cetera, to help kind of paint the big picture of what's happening. Because, you know, when I ride, for instance, and I've seen these roadkill and wildlife as I've ridden for the project, I'm always just fascinated by, like, why here? Why did this animal get struck here? And, you know, and then I go and I can ride 10 miles and there's nothing. So it's actually, I expected a little bit of a gross out moment when I first rode, you know, thinking, oh my God, I'm going to stop and look at roadkill. But it's fascinating because you realize there's this little crime scene here with a lot to kind of investigate and look around. And it helped me see the roadways a little bit different. Instead of just seeing my path, you know, through the wilderness, I realize it's this intricate web of roads that are just invisible to me that, you know, all the other animals are taking.
Right. That's a great insight. I think it's pretty easy for people to kind of lose that perspective and to kind of forget that we're not the center of all we've surveyed. So,
absolutely. And I think that's one of the, you know, the great things about this project. It's going to reveal a lot for, you know, about all the other inhabitants on the landscape besides us, and what they need to stay safe as they move through their daily lives as well.
Great. Any other insights or thoughts that you've got about either the project or the organization or other projects that you might have coming up?
Well, I would just say, you know, that if anybody is thinking this, you know, is an interesting project, I would just encourage them to check out our website, find out what other projects we have going on right now and what's coming up, because there really is something for everyone. And it's such a rewarding way to do something you love, to be outside, to have an excuse to get outside, have kind of a mission, and know you're really doing something for someone else besides yourself. That you're contributing this wonderful legacy of science, that you're going to help protect human lives, you're going to help protect animals and the entire planet. So, you know, I think there's plenty of options for everybody and many more to come.
That's great. I mean, you know, just in case somebody was looking at you, your significant other or family member, and thinking, man, again, you're going riding again, you can always just say, hey, it's for science.
I have to ride for science today.
That's a pretty potent excuse. So,
yes, exactly. Well, and especially right now too. I mean, I know that everyone's looking for ways to social distance, and I know some of us have put on the COVID-19, you know, and like getting on a bike right now, it's kind of innately social distancing. You know, we require people to ride with a partner, and that's for safety. But, you know, bike riding is about the best thing you can do to ensure that you're going to be able to stay a distance from people and still get outside and stay healthy.
Great. Yeah. So if people want to volunteer for this or find out more information about the organization, the website is the best place to go, or?
Yeah, I would encourage them to go to adventurescientists.org/ride. That's for our road cycling project, where they can just visit the General Adventure Scientists website and find out more about the variety of projects they could participate in.
Great. It's very interesting. It's been fascinating talking to you. I've heard of the organization, but I guess I had never known that much about exactly what you do and about the different projects. So thanks very much for an informative discussion today.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. Maybe we'll see you out on the road.
There you go. And yeah, thanks for listening. And again, if you are intrigued by this project or would like to find out more, adventurescientists.org on the internet. And thanks again. This was Jen Shoemaker from Adventure Scientists, and good luck out there on the road if you're going out on the next ride.